This week, we get a rundown of what happened at the Midwest Conference of Masonic Education 2022 in Kansas City, Missouri. What were some of the ideas that were passed around from state education officer to state education officer in regards to best practices and discoveries within the realm of Masonic education? Then, we'll hear from Greg Knott, who tells us about a recent visit he had to a used bookstore. What treasures did he find? Finally, we'll wrap it up with reflections on being your own teacher, what that means, and the duality of such an idea. Truth from within or teenage angst, going against the grain, challenging the status quo, all this and more. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode number 544. I want to thank the contributors, fellows, producers, and legacy partners of the WCY podcast for making this program available and possible for the past 11 years. If you're curious on how you can help the WCY podcast make a difference in Masonic education, please head on over to WCYpodcast.com, click on Support the Show, and check out the different options that we have. In addition, we've also got a shop where we sell some limited edition items, signed books, and of course, there also is the bookstore where we link back through Amazon the various books by people who have either been on the show, recommended by our guests, or my personal favorite books. All of them are, again, Amazon links, and for every purchase, it doesn't cost you anymore, but a few pennies comes back through as an affiliate sale. I want to thank Manasseh Lodge 182 for having me out to do the Freemasonry in Colonial America. There was probably about 30 brothers there, about 60 people in total for a celebration of a man's 60 years in the craft. People came up from Tennessee to watch him get this award in an open ceremony. It was really awesome. After that had completed, I sat through a brief business meeting and we gave this presentation on Freemasonry in Colonial America. And it was a good night. I want to thank them for all their hospitality because it was absolutely amazing as always. If you're listening to this on Mother's Day and there's a mom in earshot, or maybe you're a single dad out there doing both duties, I want to wish you guys a happy Mother's Day. Thank you for all the things you do in making the world a better place for everyone else. Now, also, if you're listening to this on Sunday, that means tomorrow night, Monday night, I'm going to be doing the Masonic Pub Crawl, Freemasonry in America and its Colonial Tavern Beginnings again. I'll be doing it again as a virtual presentation for Lakeside Lodge number 258 in Washington. And then a few days later, I am doing a virtual presentation for St. Charles, Missouri chapter number 1 of the Royal Arch on the Ark and Freemasonry for a Royal Arch chapter, again for St. Charles, Missouri chapter number 1, a prestigious chapter, no doubt. And then later this month, I'll be doing Esoterics 101 hosted at the Sequoit Masonic Lodge number 827 in Antioch, Illinois. There are three presentations that are going to be happening that day. It is going to be a rather awesome evening full of great things. We've got Brother Spencer Hammond, who is going to regale us with the history and awesome stuff in the tarot, a beginner's guide, if you will. Excited about that as a practitioner of tarot myself for several years. Then we've also got Brother Scott Duball, who's going to be giving a presentation called Mastering Memory Work. That is a funny title, but really he'll be using some awesome visuals to teach us some really cool lessons. And then I'll be doing Esoterics 101, which is a pretty popular presentation, and we'll go through lots of stuff that many Masons want to know about, and particularly why they get involved in Freemasonry in the first place sometimes, and then don't find it, and then leave. So we'll be talking a little bit about all of these different mystery schools and traditions, that kind of stuff. So look forward to all that. Now, as I promised last week, I would give you guys a rundown of the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education. And so I'd really like to give this to you now because I think a lot of the things that we talked about were very popular, were very interesting, and it really is a great time to come together and network. And so if you couldn't make it to the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education, the stuff I'm going to talk about right now is going to be like the highlights, what you missed, but it's not going to be like, oh, you missed out. You don't get the benefit. I'm going to tell you what we talked about, and this will be, I'll try to keep it brief. So what is the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education? Well, it's been around for 73 years. It's the 73rd annual conference, and it was held in Kansas City, Missouri, and it was on April 29th through May 1st. Now, on Friday evening, we had just some registration kind of stuff, some get-together, social hour, that kind of thing. But then we also, at 6 p.m., the Grand Master of Missouri, Most Worshipful Brother Ty, he addressed the conference and his pleasure for being able to host this year and the importance of it. He and all of the officers of the Grand Lodge that were there were in tuxes, and he said, and I quote, "We dressed up to make sure that you know we are invested and we take it seriously." End quote. Now, this was a really awesome thing because so many times we have Grand Lodges who don't necessarily invest what they should in Masonic education, as it were, and instead the educators feel like they're not supported. But this was not the message from the Missouri Grand Master, who really felt that education is a value proposition for the membership. It is the reason men join, ultimately, and it is the expressed purpose of Freemasonry, in fact. So it was a great address. We got some real validation there. Then we had a Zoom presentation. Brother Joe Wages, he Zoomed in to give us a presentation which was really about how to conduct Masonic research. And inlaid within this presentation was actually a presentation he put together. So it was kind of a two-in-one. And it was about finding La Condure, a guide to Masonic research is what it was called. La Condure was a lodge that really kind of gave birth to some of the documents and was involved in the formation of some of the early Scottish Rite here in America, when it was the Rite of Perfection. And in Joseph's presentation, he really talked about using Google Books quite a bit. He gave some tips and tricks on how to manage your search for these books so that you could find them by decade and see what was going on and where. And then you could use search terms because it's all OCR'd. So again, a really cool presentation that he gave. It was one of my favorites. After that, we had a social hour and then we adjourned for the evening. Saturday morning was a good day also. It was a full day of education. We had registration for those who couldn't make it on Friday. And in the morning, then we had a presentation starting at 9 a.m. with Brother Dan Horinko. And Brother Dan has been on this podcast before talking about his book, The Purple of the Fraternity. Now, that book has spawned a presentation that is what he ended up giving at the Midwest Conference. Now, something I should mention here, if it isn't abundantly clear to you, is that the Midwest Conference is not like a Masonic con. It's not like a place that we go to get presentations on different topics. It's a conference that focuses on how to make Masonic education more successful in your district, in your lodges, in your states. So we really do share best practices, and then we all go home and try to implement them and raise the bar a little bit. Now, again, it's the Midwest Conference. Does that imply that there are other conferences? And yes, actually, there used to be, but they've all died off, if you can believe it. But this year, we had a record number of attendees, which means that people are more interested than ever. And I've got some exciting news about some of the things that happened at the close, at the business meeting of the Midwest Conference of Masonic Education, in just a few minutes. But Dan Horinko, again, gave this great presentation on the purple of the fraternity, and it was about Masonic leadership and training. Dan's been a Mason since 1977. He's been, you know, a master of these lodges over in Ohio a number of years. He was a DDO, a DDGM for a couple years. He wrote The Craft-Driven Lodge, which is a really great book. It's kind of like Observing the Craft, only I think it takes a little bit more of a servant leadership approach for sure. And then after that, we had some group discussion, a morning break, where we had Brother Jacob Thompson, who talked a little bit about the Masters and Wardens training that Missouri has launched last year. and that has bore some fruit for their jurisdiction. And this was a cool presentation because actually here in Illinois, we've got a good training. I think that they started to do, not for necessarily philosophical and historical information and education, but more of a leadership kind of thing, maybe a membership thing, is there's a program here in Illinois called A Roadmap to the East, which really is kind of a master's in wardens training, and they do pretty well. So if your jurisdiction doesn't have a master's in wardens training, I think that it is something that's needed. I highly recommend it, and I don't know what it would entail. I think you need to reach out to perhaps some of these other jurisdictions that have them and inquire about what they all entail. Then we had a really nice presentation on lodge education with a Q&A with Brother James Buckhorn from Indiana, who's the third vice president of the conference, as well as Brother Chad Kopensky, a former state education officer for Ohio. And they led a roundtable discussion with several Masonic educators, representatives from the states, at a roundtable, but opened up to the room. It was interesting. We really wanted to talk about education, but the conversation somewhat quickly devolved into talking about membership a little bit too much, just in my opinion, but it was still a valuable experience nonetheless. Some frustrations I think that myself as well as other members might have witnessed within some of these conversations that were happening. We had educators from various states who seemed to be frustrated that the people or their constituencies were not taking advantage of these resources. And this is an interesting thing because I think it's a process of thought evolution. They had harsh words for the constituency for not reading their emails or not reading communications. And if there is a problem with your constituency not reading these things, it's likely because of the way you're marketing them, or maybe the content just sucks. But of course, I think this is a problem all the way around. I don't think it's on any one jurisdiction, and I'm sure that there are communications that come from the best education committees that fall flat. However, I just think it's short-sighted to blame the constituency for the lack of participation in educational activities and things when they're coming out through emails or whatever that case is. It needs to be of a value to those members for them to hop on. So I really wouldn't suggest that constituencies are to blame for the failure of Masonic education. Poop doesn't roll downhill here. We need to remember that it rolls uphill because we operate in a particular way that says, hey, we are servant leaders. So if there's a failure, it's on us as educators, not at the lodge level. So we need to remember that. Secondly, there is an individual gripe, and I think, again, this is an evolution of thought process for those of us who have been in Masonic education for quite a long time. Usually there's the noob who comes into Masonic education who's really like, oh, we don't have anything, we need to offer something, let's create a program. And that program is like a Grand Lodge program, and it's a, you know, 10 check boxes, and you gotta check the boxes and you're done. And they're like, we need that, a standardized thing. Well, I'll tell you, those don't work. Nobody cares about them. I mean, there's a few people who want the certificate, and they do it, and boom, they're done, and they get the certificate. That might motivate some people, but it's really not the reason to motivate somebody. You don't want them to complete it and check the boxes for a certificate. You want them to become confident and well-educated Master Masons. So you need to come up with something better, and those kinds of programs just don't do well anyway. Then there are those out there who want to come up with like program that comes down from the Grand Lodge with like a reading. Hey, we're going to do this reading, you know, 5-minute short talk bulletin thing. And that's really been the lowest common denominator education across the United States, at least, is, you know, a lodge says, do you do Masonic education? And they go, yep, every meeting we read a short talk bulletin together. And yeah, that's great. But also, who's paying attention? Is there any discussion that's happening? And if the discussion and the reading aren't at least 30 minutes, is there really anything going on? Is it just, you know, going through the motions? And also, the other thing is that a lot of times the Short Talk bulletins, as wonderful as they are, we've read a number of them on the show, and the podcast is great. You know, they're not introspective. They're not making good men better. It's largely op-eds about problems in the craft and the solutions, or they're about historical events. But what we need to do is make sure that our education events are doing things like getting men to think about themselves and reflect and how they can become better, and then offering ways for them to do that, to exercise those things. And lastly, I would say that the next evolution of thought here is that we get to a point where they say, oh, we'll just create a correspondence course. And if you want it, you send away for it, and we'll send out packets. And that's probably as close to what you need to do as you're going to get, because a correspondence course allows the interested party to get involved on their own without a Grand Lodge or somebody barreling down on them. And it's not prescribed for everyone. It is just for the people who are interested. They have to, you know, sign up and take the class or whatever it is. And the next evolution of that, of course, is by putting that on a place like the internet where people can access it and submit things there and make it self-guided. Self-guided, it ensures that the usual small committee on education that exists isn't bogged down with having to do so much stuff for this. So think about putting correspondence courses on the internet using things like free tools, Google Forms, or Microsoft has a Forms also that you can make quizzes and readings and things of that nature. So we got to think outside the box. Think about the next set of things. And when people say, well, what about those lodges or those people without internet? This is the hard reality. It's kind of one of those oh well moments. We cannot be always thinking about the what ifs. We need to move forward and be progressive about education, and because the people that are consuming it largely have access to these things, and that's where we need to focus some of the energy. And that's just my two cents on that bit there when we kind of digressed into talking about education and the failures. The failures, in my opinion, lie with us as a Grand Lodge entity getting the plans laid out and then actually acting on them instead of talking about them for 6 months and just putting it together and putting it up there and giving a solution to the constituency so that they can get to work, rather than talking about what could be, what works best. You know, listen, just do it. So that's my two cents there. Then later on during the day at the conference, we had actual business meeting. And this is what was the interesting part. Now, the Midwest Conference of Masonic Education is an actual organization that's got a number of a president and then a number of vice presidents. They get elected, and they move through a quote-unquote line each year. Now, there's nothing really prestigious about this because we're all working together. And really, the line of presidents and vice presidents is composed of the active chairs of Masonic Education in the respective states that are members of the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education. So what that means is that certain states are members, meaning their Grand Lodge pays the $350 to be a member of the conference, and then usually the Grand Lodges pay for the representation at the conference. So that conference, what I mean by pay for them to attend or pay for them to be there, means that they pay for the ticket, they pay for their travel and the hotel to be there, all of those things. And in the grand scheme of things, the annual charge of $350 plus the, you know, getting there and having a hotel and stuff is less than $1,400 in a year for a Grand Lodge to do. So it's relatively inexpensive, very inexpensive on the Grand Lodge side of things. And over the course of years, other conferences of Masonic education have dwindled and then closed out because one by one, states leave because for whatever reason, they're not seeing a value in what was happening. Now, the reason for that is largely due to participation, and the focus on membership rather than education killed those. And we know now that the key to membership is through education. So because of this, we have a reinvestment. And the number of actual members of the Midwest Conference of Masonic Education that were present, I think we had eight, maybe nine states that were represented officially, but we had many other states that also choose to attend who are not quote-unquote members, because they're not really in the Midwest, but they attend anyway. So this opened up some thoughts over the last few years, and one of the great things that they decided to do this year was to change the bylaws of the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education. They changed them, actually, to allow for individual people to become members of the conference. And not only that, you can be an organization. An individual organization can become a member of the conference. So this is just awesome, right? Because now you're not completely beholden on Grand Lodge support to come through this. The Midwest Conference on Masonic Education is now open for the Grand Lodge to join, as well as an individual organization or a lodge or an individual person. So imagine this. The WCY podcast becomes a member of the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education and potentially one year hosts a conference. Could you believe that? And it could be you too. You could host the conference. We pull it all together, and there's an amazing team. So this is a really big deal, you guys. And then eventually, when we get moving, what if we drop the word Midwest? What if it becomes the U.S. Conference on Masonic Education? What? How cool would that be? It'd be really cool. And of course, a multi-day event with reports and things. Now, something else I want to mention about this conference was that the logistics were done so well. Instead of printing mountains of paperwork for everybody that attended, on everybody's badge, they put a QR code. And when you scanned the QR code with your phone, it pulled up a Google Drive with all of the documents in it. At your leisure, you can browse everything and follow along. It was a real awesome win. Well, after the business meeting, we broke for a couple hours, and then we went and we saw a presentation over dinner by Brother Sean Iyer. He did Architecture, Geometry, and Aesthetics, Encountering Freemasonry's Central Metaphor of the Craft. And this was an interesting presentation. And shortly after that, we wrapped up for the evening, and we gathered on Sunday morning for breakfast. And that was the entire conference, and we said our goodbyes. During the conference, what some of the most amazing things that occurred were this exchange of ideas. We talked about bylaw and constitutional amendments at the Grand Lodge level, what some states have proposed and passed versus what other states want to do. And we exchanged the verbiage of our things so that some states that want to pursue bylaw constitutional changes at the Grand Lodge level can copy that verbiage and submit it for the constituency to vote and approve on at Grand Lodge sessions in the respective year that, you know, they present it. A number of really interesting things had we talked about, from, of course, universal background checks on incoming brethren, as well as brothers who plural or join a second lodge in their own state. I guess the consternation behind that was pretty amazing at a Grand Lodge sessions for one Grand Lodge, when they decided that they were going to run background checks. If Joe Smith wanted to join A Lodge, he had to pass a background check. And then when he wanted to plural up at B Lodge in his same state, he would also have to pass a background check again. And people said this was ridiculous, and yet, to date, that Grand Lodge has actually caught several members who, in between initially coming in and then transferring to a different lodge in their state, had caught felonies and had subsequently been expelled or denied the petition. So it works, and I thought that was a really cool one. Another was a Grand Lodge that passed a sweeping law. Not every Grand Lodge is the same on felonies, right? Some lodges allow felonies, some don't, some bar them for life, some leave it up to the lodge to ascertain whether there's a felony or not, and if there is, if they want to let him in or not. And other times the Grand Lodge runs a background check, and if there's a felony, the Grand Lodge just tells the lodge, no, you can't have it. Now, what a felony is in each state differs from state to state. However, this one jurisdiction that was there actually passed some sweeping legislation about sex offenders. And so regardless of felony or not, a sex offender is barred from petitioning or becoming a Mason. I found that to be very progressive, and in my own opinion, my own humble opinion, I would also agree with that. However, this was really quite the benefit. We talked about things like drip campaigns from Grand Lodges, which is like a member. When you initiate a guy, the second the secretary records him, the Grand Lodge system would then send that person an email saying, hey, congratulations on your completion of your Entered Apprentice degree. Here's a few resources for you to have some self-guided education. And if you're curious about a couple of the things, here's some cool links. Right? And then a few days later, maybe he gets another one. And then after his fellow craft degree, he automatically, when he gets marked as a fellow craft, he gets another set of emails with some content relative to the fellow craft degree and so on and so forth. And then we keep that going. So that's a drip campaign, D-R-I-P. And it's very effective in almost every institution in America. And it's something that we are looking at, I think, in the fraternity as something that will help us make sure we don't let good men slip through the cracks who feel like nobody cared, nobody noticed, nobody gave us education. We want to make sure we give you the education. And also the other important part of that is not just allowing the education to sit there when we send it to your inbox, but it's a follow-up by a real flesh and blood brother who's going to say, hey, I got that email with you. I'm your intender. I'm your mentor. Let's get together and have coffee and talk a little bit about this stuff. Or if you don't drink coffee, let's go grab some Cokes or let's go grab a burger or something. You know, it does require that Masonic touch, which, no pun intended, that Masonic ability to get together with your brothers in person and share an experience, a meal, and talk. As Brother Greg Knott put it, Boy Scouts aren't teaching people to be better because they're teaching you knots. It's making you a better person because of the conversations you have while you're getting taught how to tie knots. And I love that explanation. Masonry is certainly that. So I hope you enjoyed that little rundown, the Midwest Conference on Masonic Education. If you have any questions about it, I would visit their website, mcme1949.org. So, Robert, you're asking me, when is the next Midwest Conference on Masonic Education? It will begin on April 28th in 2023 at the Canton Masonic Temple in Canton, Ohio. Ohio is hosting next year. Brother Chad Kopensky is the current president of the conference, and that makes James Buckhorn the first VP. So then the year in 2024, they'll be in Indiana, we'll hope. And we'll get Illinois back in the rotation soon. Next up, I want to read, speaking of Greg Knott, I wanted to read a piece that he did from the Midnight Freemasons called A Trip to the Used Bookstore. Man, I love used bookstores. I know a number of you probably do too, and it's one of my favorite places to go. It doesn't matter where it is, especially down in Springfield. They've got that Prairie Bookstore. I think it's called Prairie View Bookstore or Prairie Archives, I think it's called. A fantastic place, and always a treasure is found. But let's hear what Brother Greg Knott, 33rd degree, has to say in his piece, A Trip to the Used Bookstore. I love visiting used bookstores. They are usually crammed with titles of books that are no longer in the mainstream stores, such as Barnes & Noble. The staff is typically very passionate about books and extremely helpful in assisting you in finding that nugget you're looking for. I was in Springfield, Illinois on a recent trip, made a visit to the Prairie Archives Bookstore, located across the square from the old state capitol and two doors down from Abraham Lincoln's law office in historic downtown Springfield. Well, look at that. He's actually at the place that I was talking about. Fantastic. Let's continue. Upon entering Prairie Archives, I was instantly absorbed into all the books in front of me. This store has been around since 1973 and has established a reputation as being one of the premier used bookstores. I spent considerable time browsing through shelf after shelf of treasures who were just waiting for someone to pick them up. Numerous titles caught my attention, and it was all I could do to resist so many of them. My own personal book collection is probably now approaching 1,000 books, so I have begun to try and focus my collection down into a few key areas, with Freemasonry being one of them. Of course, there is always room for one more book, but I am working hard to become more disciplined with my book selections. Prairie Archives is extremely well organized and has an extensive online database on Abe Books. As I was making my rounds, one of the staff members asked me if he could help me find anything, and I told him that I collected Masonic-related books. He asked me if I had seen the Masonic section, and I told him I must have overlooked it. I was shown where it was, and I was pleasantly surprised by how many titles they had on hand. As I started working my way through the shelves of books, I found titles from the Missouri Lodge of Research, the Masonic Book Club, proceedings from various Masonic groups, and more. Some great stuff. I settled on four books that included Anderson's Constitutions of 1738, reprinted by the Masonic Book Club in 1978, and A Daily Advancement in Masonic Knowledge, the collected Blue Friar Lectures published by the Masonic Book Club in 2003. I also picked up Sesquicentennial History of the Grand Commandery of Knight Templar of the State of Illinois, 1857 to 2007 by Robert Baker Fisher, and Grand York Presiding Officers, Illinois, 1847 to 2007 by John Thomas Ritus, Sr. I was extremely pleased with my new treasures. Support your local bookstores. Buy new and used. There are many books just waiting for you to rediscover them and share the knowledge they contain. Serva Lectio, which is Latin for keep reading. Greg J. Knott, 33rd degree. So funny that Greg wrote about Prairie Archives, as I mentioned before I even read the article. I love it. It is a great bookstore, and I hope you guys check it out when you go to Springfield on Grand Lodge Sessions, or if you're a Mason from around the world and you find yourself in good old Springfield, Illinois, check out that bookstore. I'll have links back to that bookstore's website and their archive and their database in the show notes. So for the Craftsman Plus, I want to know, what is your favorite bookstore, used or new? How often do you go to a bookstore? And do you always buy a book? What's the last book you bought? Tell us all about it. We can share, and maybe we can take some recommendations and put some new stuff on our reading lists. Now, to wrap it up this week, I'd love to give a tarot card reading, a single card from the deck. This week, I'm going to be using the standard Smith-Waite deck. What's the Smith-Waite deck, Robert? Well, the Smith-Waite deck is the Rider-Waite deck, but I don't call it the Rider-Waite deck because I don't think the publisher has any real value in what we're talking about here. The value certainly comes in with the artwork. And so this week we're using the traditional Smith-Waite deck, and Smith is the artist, Pamela Coleman Smith, aka Pixie, and Waite, Arthur Edward Waite, who is a prolific Mason of, I don't know what kind of repute you would give him. However, he is, sometimes he's kind of a, I don't know, he can be a little bit of a pompous know-it-all at times in his writings. However, he is a value to Freemasonry, nonetheless. So I'm going to shuffle these up. And while I do, let me tell you why, if you are curious, a first-time listener, why I would be doing a tarot card in a Masonic podcast. Well, I am an esoteric Mason, right? I'm a philosophical Mason, I should say. I think esoteric gets overused. I'm a philosophical Mason, and as such, I'm always thinking about thoughts and empathy and making the world better and making myself better and being reflective. And part of tarot is absolutely being reflective. And so what I'm doing with the tarot here is not divination. It's not fortune telling. We're simply grabbing a card, and we're going to look at what prescribed meaning it has, according to Waite, and also the more up-to-date Paul Case meaning, and what it could mean for us practically. So it's kind of like, I say all the time, a psychological card-based Rorschach, I guess. We're going to pull the card, talk about what it means, and then hopefully you think, what does that mean for me? Is there an instance in my life that this could be meaningful? And in addition to that, how do I deal with it Masonically? So, let's check it out. I don't have any specific way that I shuffle. I've said that a bazillion times, but I want to make sure that people joining us for the first time know that I'm very loose with how I shuffle and all of those things. So let's go ahead and take one card off the top. Okay, I got the Hierophant, but I drew it inverted. Now, Paul Case doesn't really address the inverted card any different than it being right side up, and I would agree with that. However, I will tell you what it supposedly means if it's inverted, but then we'll focus on what it could mean for us practically. at least in Freemasonry. The Hierophant, in general, is a card that usually is about spiritual wisdom, your religious convictions or beliefs, your ability to conform to those beliefs, and the traditions and maybe the institutions that allow you to practice these different things. Now, if the card is reversed, it becomes much more personal. So what do I mean by that? If it's reversed, we're talking about not necessarily dogma, but your personal beliefs. The idea of freedom and of what we might term challenging an institution, or some people say challenging or going against the status quo. So what does this card mean if it's reversed? Now, what I just mentioned to you is really the Arthur Edward Waite meaning of the card. But the Hierophant being reversed is actually its most positive aspect. It's most positive in the reversed. It reminds you that you are your own teacher. This is so key in Freemasonry because you're the one who has to reflect. You're the one who has to do the work. You hear it all the time. You get out of Masonry, what you put into it. You're your own teacher. You're the one who's got to make not just the first step into a philosophical understanding of what these working tools are doing for you, but you have to contemplate what those tools are doing for you. Is it divesting your hearts and consciousnesses of the vices and superfluities of life? What does that mean? Does that mean you should think about stop drinking or don't drink as much or quit smoking, or, you know, if you've got some other bad habit? Yeah, it does include those things, but you are your own teacher. All of the wisdom, all of the knowledge that you want actually comes from within yourself, not from some external source like a dogmatic system. It also means that you might be being told by your psyche that you need to follow your intuition, make your own path, blaze your own trail. And even if it means adopting your own spiritual belief systems rather than blindly following others, rather than just following what other people have set up for you and what you may have been indoctrinated into. This might sound like bad advice or a little unnerving, unsettling, but over time you're going to be more comfortable in your own beliefs and you'll trust yourself more than you trust what other people are telling you to believe. This card also means, outside of the religious aspect or the spiritual aspect, it means that you don't need anybody else's approval. It means you're the authority here. You have the authority to complete projects, to succeed, and you can do it all by yourself. And that means also, even when you're going it alone and against the grain, you can trust yourself. That's what this card is saying. It means that maybe you're within your lodge and your lodge is looking to do something and you think that way is kinda dated. It means that you can challenge the status quo. It means you can give your idea and work toward it and see what comes out of it. Because every failure is an opportunity. So if you see a lodge failure in repeated methods of doing the same thing over and over again, maybe you've got a better way to do it. And it's time to go with it. And then it also leads into one of the last things that we call, in the business world, you might make a correlation to ZBB, which is zero-based budget, which tells us that we have to basically like evaluate every dollar we spent in the past and say, should we do that again? Did we get a return on investment, an ROI? In this case, the Hierophant is telling us we should look at the way we've done things and see if it aligns with our values still. You know, in Freemasonry, are we raising money for the lodge or are we raising money for relief for somebody? The lodge kind of doesn't count here. We need to be a little bit more selfless, I think. We need to, quote unquote, try Freemasonry, as Dwight L. Smith might have put it. We need to question why the fraternity does certain things. We're not talking about traditions here. We're talking about our values as Masons or your own lodge, or a practice in your own lodge. Feel free to get philosophical about it also. For our Craftsman Plus, I'll go ahead and I'll post a picture of the card that we drew, and I'll put it in the Craftsman Plus group for you to use to contemplate on, and I hope that you have some awesome revelations. And feel free to share anything that comes to mind with the Hierophant and its kind of rebellious teenage nature, and also, ultimately, this kind of fool's wisdom of having it all within you without having to pull from an external source. That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with another great episode. I think we'll have a Masonic Minute from illustrious brother Stephen L. Harrison, or we might even have something from Patrick Day, a Masonic Mythbusters segment or something. So stay tuned. We'll talk to you all next week. I want to thank our producers, fellows, contributors, and legacy partners one more time. And, of course, I want to thank everybody out there who shares the podcast with their lodge brothers and everybody else in their lives who has an interest in Freemasonry. Of course, it's kindred sciences. If you want to learn more about how you can help support the WCY podcast, head on over to WCYpodcast.com. Click on Support the Show and check out the options available. One more time, thank you so much for coming with us this week on a cool educational journey. We'll talk to you all next week. And until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson. Take care.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.
WCY Media.